It's evening. The disciples are in the boat with Jesus, crossing the Sea of Galilee when a great storm arises. A couple of years ago, Mary and I were in that part of the world on the Sea of Galilee with a group of the Come and See tour that Mary and I were on. We were to cross that sea in a boat late afternoon. We were behind schedule, though, and that crossing, instead of late afternoon, happened to be at night. But it was a night like this morning was calm. And we crossed that lake on glassy seas. And about in the middle of the lake, the captain of the little boat we were on cut the motor, and we sat there in silence. I tried to imagine what it would have been like to have been a fisherman on that lake, experiencing days when it was that calm and nights when it was that peaceful. But then the terror of also getting caught in a storm that came up unexpectedly. It wasn't easy to think about that terror and that tumult, because that night was so peaceful. In our story this morning, the boat is beaten by the wind and the waves. It's filling with water and ready to sink. The disciples are already bailing water, likely. And where's Jesus? He's asleep in the stern, untroubled by the storm, indifferent, it seems, to their peril, unperturbed by their fear. And these words, I think, in many respects, at times become our words. Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing? When we consider the personal tragedies and the situations that people struggle with every day in our world, and sometimes we join that struggle, we too wonder if perhaps Jesus is asleep on the job. I'm not on Facebook much these days anymore, but happened to go on Facebook this week and noticed a friend posted pictures of cars in her black neighborhood that were spray painted with racial epithets and swastikas. By those intent on creating terror in that community, the travesty of the policy of our current administration, which continues on even though the separation of parents and children was resolved this week, is an outrage and should have storms of indignation going on in our souls. Mary and I got word this week that a friend of our oldest daughter's is struggling. We don't know what that struggle is. But with what is happening in our communities and with mental illness, that's where our thoughts go. I'm also aware of the 2006 church member profile of Mennonite Church USA that indicate that one in five women in our Mennonite Church USA congregations have experienced sexual abuse or violation, most of them while they were teens or children. These are the kinds of things that threaten our hopes and cause us turmoil, threaten to swamp our lives. We have all stood by those whose lives have been turned upside down with news of life-threatening illness and the real possibility that this life on earth will soon be ending. And we echo the words of the disciples. Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing? Take a little bit closer look at this story from Mark's gospel. Why does Mark include it? That's always the question I have in the back of my mind as I read any of these stories. Why does the gospel writer include this story, not some other? We're learning about Jesus right along with the disciples who are following him, but clearly indicate some level of cluelessness about who he is. They're very much on the way, on a journey with Jesus, and he invites them into the boat. He also indicates in the text that, yes, they get into the boat with him just as he is. And I don't know, I thought of preaching, I didn't know where I would go with that, Libby.
Maybe next time.
But I also notice from the text that there is another curious statement here. There were other boats with them. Other boats were with him. And I wonder, who are these other boats? This week, Mary and I joined a number of other people in Philadelphia and Center City for an interfaith dialogue. So we interacted with a variety of faith traditions. And I wonder if Mark's gospel isn't saying, hey, there's other boats beside mine on the sea. But the whole journey, Jesus inviting them into the boat, seems to be his idea. And why? Did he know that there was a storm coming? Hadn't he checked his weather app? And I think that maybe Jesus is trying to tell his disciples that this journey isn't always going to be smooth sailing. Discipleship isn't always peaceful, calm life. Some of the greatest adventures with Christ will be those in the dead of night, when there are storms around us and within us, when we feel lost and terrified. We know that as we speak of God's inclusive love for all people, not just God's love for those who speak our language or name our faith tradition or wave our flag or share our sexual identity and gender or agree with our political ideology. We know that we will often be misunderstood, perhaps rejected, experience stormy seas. But we can realize that we are assured that there won't always be smooth sailing. Almost every page of Mark's gospel proclaims that Jesus is the center of the storm. When Jesus is near, the winds seem to not always die down, but even pick up with conflict. The waves bang against the side of the boat, and there's trouble. for Jesus, for his disciples. But in the face of all these things, the Christian faith declares that God does care for us. The creator of the heavens and the earth, we believe, knows us by name and loves us. As the psalmist says, knit us together in our mother's womb. When we are considering the vastness of our universe and our small place in it, it's astonishing to believe that, yes, Jesus cares for us individually and collectively. That God knows our needs and provides for us like a loving mother or father. In his book, Theology for a Troubled Believer, Diogenes Allen notes that the understanding that we are not at the center of all things helps us gain perspective about our lives. We are part of something much bigger, subject to the laws of nature, and as he puts it, vulnerable to injury, illness, decay, and death. Such awareness leads us to taking our rightful place in that world, in that universe, leads us anyway, to a kind of humility. And realize that it doesn't all revolve around us. Hard lessons. As infants, and we see this in our now 11-month-old grandson, the world, he likes to think, revolves around him. But hopefully we grow up and realize it does not. Allen goes on to say we're also spiritual beings when confronted with that reality of being a spiritual being. When things happen to us, we know that God is still with us. That Spirit of God, that Spirit of Christ that we sometimes call Holy Spirit is there to sustain us. In addition to discovering our place in God's universe, Allen describes a second step, and that is trusting in God's loving care, which enables us to experience God in the midst of the suffering. It's a struggle for the disciples as they face the storm in the boat. They feel alone and abandoned by the one in whom they have put their trust. And surely this is a metaphor for the early church, for the struggling band of disciples that Mark is addressing in this gospel, because they are in the midst of a storm, living in the Roman Empire, in a culture that's hostile to any allegiance except allegiance to Caesar. And they certainly wondered, as this huddled in their little boat of what wasn't even the church yet, but just a struggling band of Christians, where is Jesus? Buffeted, beaten, almost destroyed by the stormy seas of the Roman Empire. And in part, I believe this story is told to reassure the church that Jesus is with them, with us, in suffering, even when we don't immediately see or recognize him. God, through Christ, enters into the world, has come into the midst of suffering and pain on our border, and the children separated from their parents, feeling the terror, even as near to us as Bethlehem, has come to us in our struggle to be human, in our own fear and anxiety. He is one of us, with us. As the psalmist says, O Lord, you have searched and known me. You know when I sit down, when I rise up. You search my path, my lying down. You are acquainted with all my ways. Where can I go from your spirit? Or where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you're there. If I make my bed in Sheol, you are there. If I take the wings of the morning and settle in the farthest limits of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me, and your right hand shall hold me fast. So even when it seems we're living in hell, even there, God is with us. When the terrified disciples call out to Jesus, he answers them by calming the wind and stilling the sea. And they don't yet understand that it's the one who loves them who's also the Lord of the sea, not only of their lives. And that this Jesus will teach them how to live and how to die in faith. He will teach them by example. He does not refuse the storm. He walks toward the storm. He knows betrayal. He knows suffering. He knows grief, disappointment, torture, and death. Yet he commits his life to God to find this peace suspended between heaven and earth on the cross. Yes, Jesus cares. But it does not mean that we will not go through suffering, danger, and even death. Through the storms, we are held by the love of the one whom even the wind and the waves obey. And as Libby indicated early in her comments, there's a second question that begs our attention. Jesus asking them the question about their lack of faith and understanding. For certainly they had been with him for some time, and they had heard his teaching of the kingdom. They saw his compassionate works. They were with him at all times, but it seems that they still were not understanding. And Mark paints this brutally honest portrayal of the disciples throughout the gospel. And yet, despite their misunderstanding and despite their lack of faith, Jesus stays with them. He doesn't desert them. He continues in the boat with them. He doesn't seem to resent their misunderstanding. He keeps saving them, keeps coming to them, even in the midst of their terror. Now, if I were writing this gospel, I would leave this gospel with the disciples kind of singing around the campfire, Kumbaya. But that's not where this gospel text takes us or leaves us. You see, you would think that the disciples' reaction would be one of great relief and peace. But the Greek text literally reads like this: and they feared a great fear. Our NRSV reads, and they were filled with great awe. I feel like they did a bit of a misservice in the translation. And they feared a great fear. Here they are, still in the boat, the calm, the sea is now calm, no longer in danger of drowning, but they fear a great fear. The story begins with the disciples being terrorized by the wind and the waves, and the story ends with the disciples terrorized by the intervention of Jesus. It sent me to the commentators, say, what's going on here? And yeah, you read different things and take your pick of ones you like. One I read said that we modern educated people can't stomach interventionists, an interventionist God, a God who hears and cares and acts. Said it's because we are so scientific, so modern, and so skeptical. We like to think we know how the world works, and when it doesn't work like that, it fills us with terror. Maybe on to a little bit of something. Can we believe that God does intervene in our lives? And what does that evoke in us? That God can calm the seas, literally. That God does rebuke injustice. That God's calming voice is still in the midst of the storm. What if it's not all up to us? What if there always exists the possibility that our anguished cry for help may, in fact, be heard? Maybe things are more open-ended than we thought. There is always hope, always a way where there seems to be no way. But if we love control and want a God we can predict, in a world where things are settled and nailed down, this wild, unpredictable God brings a certain terror, a kind of fear, awe, terror, that I think can only be diminished by coming back and realizing that our God is one who ultimately is there for us, for the good, who cares for us, who ultimately brings about the kingdom on earth as it is in heaven. As in any of these stories, they leave us with as many questions as answers. And that's the beauty of the text, that as many times as I've read this story, reflected on this, heard this as a child, and now as an adult, there seems to be an endless possibility of new things for which we can learn and grow. But I leave you with the unopened, unending story that goes on and on.